You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy.
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for November 16th, 2021. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, certified professional organizer and owner of the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is a webcast and podcast where we dig deep into the clutter that stands between people and the lives they want to be living. We aim to make sense of where so much stuff comes from in the first place, and we offer strategies to slow down the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we choose to keep. We rely heavily on the questions and topic suggestions we get from you, our viewers and listeners.
If you're joining us in the Zoom meeting for the first time, we want to let you know that you can share comments and questions via the chat, and I'll try to make sure Gail addresses them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question yourself via audio or video. We are also streaming the webcast live on Facebook, so you can share your questions and comments there, and I'll relay them to Gail. And occasionally, I will say shout out to Claire in Brighton, UK, and similar comments. Carol is also in Brighton, UK. Look at that. We have a whole following in Brighton. All right, we're going to start as we usually do by following up on last week's weekly tittle, which was called Take a Fresh Look. The assignment was to evaluate your wardrobe with focus on freeing up space and reducing decision overload by simplifying your available options. We want to hear from our participants in Zoom and Facebook. Who thinned out a closet or a dresser drawer this week? Did anyone take on the bonus assignment and make progress toward declaring your clothing manifesto? Please let us know in the comments. We talked a lot last week about reducing the wardrobe via donation, and YouTube viewer E. Dennis had a helpful comment to add. E. Dennis said, please don't donate your junky clothes, clothes that need mending, worn out clothes, etc. Nobody wants them, and the place you donate to will just have the expense of having it taken to the landfill. 80% of donated clothes go to the landfill because so much is donated that it can't possibly be sold. So keep in mind that you need to take responsibility for your own garbage. Don't pass it on for someone else to dispose of.
I always hate to discourage people against donating clothing because it helps lots of people out when you do. But the commenter is correct about this in his observation, his or her observation, that sending off worn out, shabby clothes or things that need a bunch of mending, they're not likely to be resold or offered to someone to wear. Goodwill, for example, gathers cotton material and they do cotton recycling there. So some of the donations that go into Goodwill are rerouted to cotton recycling, which is great. Goes off to be made into rags, or it goes off to be recycled to be used for a source material for upcycling to something else. But not everything happens that way. And so it may be that in order to feel like more of the clothing is going to get used, that you have to do a little bit more research into where you're donating and who is going to be the ultimate recipient of their program. And so keeping that in mind as you get rid of 13 bags. Somebody said last week they had 13 bags of clothes that they took to donation. And so when you go and take 13 bags, maybe you want to take those at two different places and put two different options out there so that it expands the possibility of the audience it's going to be in front of. And the clothing that becomes, that's not really wearable, if it's cotton, then you can take it somewhere where you know it's going to become cotton recycling, which is Goodwill. And if it's not cotton, then you have to make another choice about, am I going to just throw it away? Am I going to cut it up for rags and give it away for somebody to use? Or you can't use all of, you can't cut up all your worn clothing and make 400 million rags in your own house. You probably already have 4 million rags, I'm pretty sure. So it's not an option to keep them, is what I'm saying. So you don't want to leave them in the house. You just want to spread out your donations to more than one place in the hope of getting it in front of a larger audience that way. And gritting your teeth and throwing away things that you think, if you wouldn't wear them, if they're really in bad shape, then maybe it's just time to let them go.
Yeah.
And trash them.
Diane said our city mission takes any clothing that they can recycle. So yeah, just check with your recycling, your donation venues of choice and find out how they deal with stuff and whether you're, you know, make sure you're comfortable with where it's going. Rowan added, if you donate in the big metal boxes, they will be shipped overseas to be recycled. I would want to dig deeper into that, you know, because I've heard terrible stories of huge volumes of stuff just getting shipped overseas and dumped, you know.
Well, exactly. And, you know, this is the problem that we've created by buying way more than any one person can actually use and then not having any place to, like, nobody else needs our 800 pieces of clothing either. And so
we are
dealing with the results of too much everywhere.
And one of the things we were trying to emphasize last week is, well, you can't, you know, there's only so much you can do about what you already have, but going forward, you can be more strategic about your wardrobe and have fewer high quality things and contribute less to the waste stream.
Yeah, to what is ultimately going to be a big pile.
Catherine said, finally getting supplies to redo a closet for better use.
Yeah.
Now I just have to apply the paint and screw in hooks. And Kara said, I was ready to get after this tittle. I went through drawers and closet and donated 2 bags of clothing. I am no longer digging through the drawers to look for something to wear. I also found the pair of jeans I've been missing hanging on the temporary hook. Thanks for the reminder to look there.
That's funny.
And Anita reports, I had a friend in for a try-on session and cleared out 22 items.
Ooh.
13 of them dresses I am never going to get back into.
Mm-hmm. And you don't need mocking you in your closet anymore, right?
Right. Rowan said, manifesto, must be comfortable enough to sleep in.
Hey! That's criteria.
That's a great standard. Yes.
Right.
Well, you know, I think also for a lot of us who are, you know, in deep into middle age, shall we say, the standard is it has to be comfortable to sit in and comfortable to get up and down out of chairs and off of couches in, you know, because some things just aren't.
Right. Yeah. The whole, I need to suffer to be beautiful thing gets way less important the older you get. It's like, I don't have time for that. I don't need these shoes to pinch. I don't need these pants to choke off, you know, my waist and make it hard for me to sit down. I don't need this bra to make me feel like there's, you know, wires cutting into me. Like, no, I don't have time for that anymore. It better be easy to wear and comfortable. And that's a good criteria later in life.
Lise said, I pulled out a few things in the process of painting around the house and using old things to wear for the tasks we'll dispose of when completed. By the time we get done, we may have to start the tasks all over again.
Welcome to maintenance, right? That's the whole point of the process is there is, you continue to live, you continue to add things, buy things, shop. Things come into your house and you are constantly having to make choices and let things go back out again. It is not a static environment.
Elizabeth says H&M says they can recycle the fabrics of clothes if you drop them off in their retail stores.
Ooh.
Yeah. I wasn't aware of that.
That's cool.
Deborah, she of the original clothing manifesto, says, clothes are under control if you don't count the large dresser of scarves and far too many shoes.
We all have our weak spots, right?
Yes. Our house is almost perfectly organized unless you count paper.
Exactly. My house is almost perfectly organized unless you count beads.
Yes.
And then it's a little bit too much, but what can I say? I still manage to contain it all. There's just a lot of it.
Agatha says, I divorced my high heels. I don't know if that was this week in response to the tittle, but it's a move forward, definitely.
Right?
Okay, we have a lot to talk about, so let's get to the main event.
Off we go.
And I should start by saying we prepared this topic thinking it would be a one-week topic, and then we wrote so darn much stuff that we decided this is a two-week topic. So we're going to introduce the topic today and then do some follow-up next week. So our homes tend to fill up with the artifacts and debris of our busy lives as much as by conscious choices that we made. So they can come to represent a distorted view of our lives and our tastes. Today, we're going to talk about designing a vision for your home to guide your decluttering efforts and reflect a truer picture of who you are and what you love. Today is part one.
Part one. In our September 1, 2020 webcast, one of our participants, Ginger, shared a vision statement that she and her husband had written for their home. Here's a little bit of that statement. Our home is warm and inviting and always company ready. People may drop by without notice, and we are relaxed and happy to invite them into our home. We have established routines, methods, and supplies to maintain order and cleanliness with minimal effort. It's a joy to tend to our home. Every item has its designated space. There is nothing stored under our beds or on the floors of closets. We know what we have and where it is stored. We use everything we own, and we have everything we need. I love all the aspects and the directions that she covered in this vision. Ginger and her husband crafted a statement with specific details about how they wanted their home to feel and how their home should support their lifestyle and values. And since they wrote the statement, they've used it to guide their choices about what, if anything, to add and what to let go and how to arrange what remains. Ginger has a very clear vision, and it reminded me that many of us haven't spent any time thinking about our homes with that goal in mind. Without a clear vision for how we want our space to feel and how we'll use it, we're more vulnerable to merely reacting to what life tosses our way. We tend to buy on impulse or on reflex, and we keep things out of confusion or unquestioned habits or a vague sense of, I might need that someday. So what does that look like in real life? How do our homes get so out of sync with our real selves? Well, first, we follow fashion trends instead of choosing our own styles. We're reacting to what is being published as, this is the style that's in, this is the trend that's in, instead of thinking about what we really find interesting or appealing. We collect a million ideas from magazines and books and HGTV, and they all feel like good ideas at the time. We buy the stuff that manufacturers have made too much of and retailers are eager to sell, because then they put them on sale and then you just have to have it because it's a great deal. But you end up with a bunch of stuff that doesn't have anything to do with what you really want going on in your house. We also get a lot of things as gifts. So that is a source of stuff that the person who gives it to you probably does not have a really good clue about what you would find important or valuable. So while they're being kind and giving you something out of their love for you and their desire to gift you, it's likely that that gift is going to not align with what you need or what is most important in your house. We inherit things from our relatives or from our younger selves. There's a lot of stuff in people's houses that they bought in their 20s that make absolutely no sense in their 40s.
Or made no sense in their 20s either, but
it's what was available.
It was what was available. It was what peer one persuaded them to take home.
And was affordable probably too, right? When you first acquire that stuff, it's all about how much you can afford. We keep things for a multitude of unclear or sentimental reasons, like inertia and guilt and a feeling of obligation or fear of loss or shame. And like we just said, we don't have enough resources to easily make our vision a reality. If money is an issue, then likely we've compromised what we want, or we take the free option, even though it's not really the thing that we need. Having resources mean we can quickly obtain what works best for us, but limited resources means we have to spend more time hunting for the right thing in our price range. It requires a lot more legwork and a lot more dedicated searching to find this is what I have in mind and this is how I can afford that vision. We've also likely been discouraged or made afraid to express our needs and desires, depending on where you are in the family and how you feel like your voice counts or matters. You may not have been directly asked about what you wish to happen here. Ginger and her husband wrote their manifesto, their vision for the house together as a unit. But it may be that in the creating of the house, you haven't been consulted to your full extent. So if your house is out of sync with what you'd like to see, then we want to talk today about how you might get more clarity and less stress in your organizing process by creating a vision for your own home or space. Before we get into the details of designing a vision, let's talk for a moment about mission versus vision. Some home experts suggest writing a mission statement for your space. And here's an example that Ed found from Kelly at imperfecthomemaking.com. Her statement says, "The mission of this home is to nurture and nourish the mind, body, and spirit of all who enter by creating a warm and welcoming refuge and an atmosphere of love, learning, simplicity, and order, so that our own family and guests alike will leave here feeling refreshed, encouraged, and well-loved." So that's her very beautiful mission statement. It's a beautiful statement that establishes the most important feeling and values that she wants to embody in her home. But we're suggesting that you take the process a few steps farther by expanding the mission into a vision, a more substantial picture or statement that includes more specific and practical details to guide you going forward. So what are the factors to consider as you craft a vision for your space? Here are some of the possibilities. First, you want to consider the functions and purposes. Besides the obvious ones, like you need a place to sleep and you want a place to keep your stuff, what functions or purposes do you want your home to serve? So I'm going to ask, are you raising children? If so, then the care and nurturing of your children will be at or near the top of your list of priorities for how the space will function. Do you work from home? Then you have to support your ability to work from home. Do you operate a business? So maybe you're operating a business either out of the house or in the house, and you need your home space to support your ability to operate that business. Sometimes that involves some of the business being stored at the house, which is another conversation. Do your members of your family go to school or study for personal enrichment? Then the house needs to support the fact that someone is trying to go to school and come home and do homework and study. Do you like to entertain guests or have house guests? If that's part of what you wish for in your life, then you need to design your space to support guests being there and coming to stay, or having guests come for your dinner party or your Christmas event, that kind of thing. Do you like to cook or grow any of your own food? If you're a chef or you are a happy gardener that likes to grow things to eat, then you need to build your kitchen and your garden around the fact that you want to do that, right? So planning for that function is part of the vision. Do you make arts and crafts? Are you a crafty chick like me? If you are, then you know you got to have a space for that. There's got to be a studio that supports your ability to go and be crafty and do artwork and be functional while you do it and not be blocked out of your own creativity by the chaos or the cramped space or the inability to function and do your crafts. Do you enjoy listening to or making music? I had a client once who they would host sing-alongs and with guitars and piano at their house regularly. It was part of something they did as an outreach from church. And so they would have 10 or 15 people over to the house, all sitting around in the living room on chairs with instruments, singing music together. And so their living room was designed for those in-home concerts. And that's something that they had to plan for. Do you like to collect something or many things? If you have a bunch of collections, then planning to display those collections and be able to keep those clean and safe is all part of the vision for the house. This one reminds me of my mother. Do you have the habit of napping? If you like to take a nap every day, then you want to have that be part of how your house is designed. Maybe you use your house for staycations. Like you like to have your week off and then stay in the house for the week alone. And stay at home instead of travel. And so having your vision support your staycations is important. What's your preferred lifestyle? For example, maybe you're somebody who you think that work is your passion and home is where you rest and recharge to be ready for work. Or maybe you're the person where home is mostly a base of operations because you love to be out and about. You enjoy interacting with people. You enjoy being out, learning new things and being out in the world. And home is just where you come home to recuperate and sleep and launch yourself out into the next thing you're going to be doing. Or maybe you can't wait to get home and you cherish your sanctuary and your solitude, that coming home and being at home alone is where you find the most rejuvenation, you find the most enjoyment, and it's a place where you want to spend a whole lot of time instead of having it be a place that you launch away from to go do things outside the home. And last but not least, what functions or purposes would you wish for your home to be serving that it isn't serving now? So thinking about all of these options are part of considering what functions and purposes does the home need to serve. And it's going to be different for everybody.
Gail, may I interrupt you for just a moment to say I got booted out and had to restart. And so I have lost some of the Zoom chat. So if you have said anything you would like me to share with Gail in the chat while we're still going, please repeat it. The first thing I have is a comment from Emily Sue a moment ago, which I'll share because it's a really good one.
Okay.
She says, I don't know why this topic creates in me nervous and jittery feelings. Maybe because I have to be completely honest with myself, it also makes me feel intense excitement, like it's an area that I'm not used to exploring in me. I've been in such disarray for many years. Embracing my mission is the right step forward for me, though. Thank you for challenging me with this topic.
You're so welcome. I'm glad that it resonates for you. And I think it is something that if you are, whether you're starting your life or if you've been living in this house for a long time, life requires a lot of us, and we don't often stop and get still enough to go, what do I want this house to do? Most people just run from the moving truck, barfs everything out into the house, and they unpack it as quickly as possible and go back to work. And so you don't put a lot of time and effort into thinking about it. And we're asking that you challenge the blind spot that you have about what this house does for you, what you want it to do for you, how you want it to look, and how you want it to support you. And it does require some thinking about it. And I will say, it may, in the thinking about it, you may start to have feelings that are like, oh, I've done that badly, or I didn't, this is wrong or bad, or I failed here or whatever. And I don't want to suggest that you start beating yourself up for ways that it's not supporting you or things that you've done that have clearly turned out to not be in your best interests or in your own vision. So whatever the feelings are about it that make you feel bad, just go, bup, that's not part of the vision. we're just focusing on what things you want and how it can be helpful. because once you have that vision in mind, then you can be constantly aiming for it and adjusting for it all the time. And it will only bring improvement in your space. It will only make you feel more comfortable and more aligned with your space. And that's what we're going for. So we're not trying to set off everybody's, you know, panic attack or feeling bad about themselves. We're trying to help you vision something that is loving and supportive to you instead.
And it's about looking forward.
Exactly. It's about looking forward from where you're standing. So the next thing is we want to consider the stakeholders. So aside from the functions of the house, you want to consider the stakeholders. Who gets a say in how your house is arranged or organized, and who'll be responsible for maintaining it once the vision, maintaining the vision once you've designed what the vision will be. So first of all, it's going to be you. It should go without saying that you should have, or at least share, a central role in the process of creating a vision. But it's easy to subordinate our needs and desires to other people's stuff, circumstances beyond our control, and the ordinary chaos of day-to-day life. We're hoping that you will resist that and focus on what you are hoping for, what you feel supported by. You also want to consider a spouse or partner. That person also has a stake in being in the house. And so it can't just be your vision. Like Ginger and her husband did hers together. You and your significant other, your roommate or housemate, are all people that have to be comfortable with how the house functions and what that vision will be. And so it's definitely something that you have to plan together. You can also include as a stakeholder minor children or adult children who return. We have some of those in our life, and particularly lately. People came home because of the pandemic that weren't intending to be home after they graduated from college or went off to start their first job. And then they ended up being at home after all. So there are people in the house, kids, who can share part of what would make it work for them. We don't want to surrender our stuff to them, but it's certainly people that are stakeholders that you want to compromise with. Another person to consider is any elderly parents or relatives who live with you or who might someday live with you. If you can look down the near pike and see that, you know, 5 years from now, it's likely that your mother's going to come and live with you, or your grandfather is going to have family support and he's going to come and move in, then planning for that eventuality can be part of the vision, that you want to be the person that receives that relative and you want to make it comfortable for them, can be part of the vision that you plan for. To the extent that your stakeholders are willing and able, share the process of creating a vision. Gather as a family or a household and give everybody a chance to talk about their needs and desires. Offer your ideas about the benefits of sharing ownership and responsibility for the space and its design and maintenance. Be prepared to make a few compromises as you work to balance complex requirements. Clearly, you know, a minor child is going to say, I want the whole house to be a play zone. So probably need to compromise on some of that stuff. But you may be the person that likes to have guests over all the time. And your spouse may be somebody who is like, really don't want to see that many people after work. And so you guys have to come up with a compromise about, you're happy for people to come and you can do it this many times and you're willing to have dinners, but not have overnight guests, or you're willing to have overnight guests, but you don't want more than two, or you can design it in a compromise way between you and the other adults in the house.
Well, in this room, we'll keep always ready for company, mm-hmm. and everything else is private.
Yeah, exactly. Designing how it works for both people is what I'm saying. And so if you have a very extroverted partner and a very introverted partner, y'all's goals for the house are going to be different. So you may have to create that vision where this part of the house is zoned for introvert people, where it's quiet and private and none of it not invaded. And this part of the house is where I entertain guests and where guests stay overnight. And so that may be part of the compromise process. Lastly, you want to consider what you have that you can't live without. If you have things or objects or furniture that you absolutely love and want to keep, then those things become the anchors of your space. They anchor the style, the color themes. The look of the space will be driven by those things that bring you the most joy. It's important to know what meets the criteria of it has to be here because I love it so much. Truly, those items are the launching point of a plan for your space, and everything will revolve around them. So it's time to make an inventory of the items or the collections that you consider non-negotiable. If you have a collection of historical family photos that you love, then planning to display them prominently will be important. Grandma's beautiful brick front is a dark wood and belongs in the dining room, so the dining room better work to display that furniture there. Your favorite chair is a recliner in the family room in front of the TV. Then you have to plan around that recliner being used the most often and being an operations center for you when you're resting at home. These are just examples, but truly anything that you feel has to stay is part of the design and vision plan for your home. These are the first elements of a vision for your home. If you spend some time creating a vision for the space, then you'll get more clarity in your keep toss decisions and choices about where to put the things you're keeping. It can support you in your organizing and decluttering projects that way. Next week, we're going to add some more elements to consider in your home vision, but you can get started with these elements right now.
Let's talk about some comments. A lot of the comments I have right now are still in response to the wardrobe question. Catherine said, I cherish zero waste. And when I found B. Johnson's book, it helped give me a thought out plan to consider. The book is called Zero Waste Home, The Ultimate Guide to Simplifying Your Life by Reducing Your Waste. Mm. I'll look for that one and share a link in the show notes.
Okay.
Connie said, like Emily, and this is on today's topic, like Emily, I realize as you speak that we are not making the best use of our space. Must think hard on that. And kudos to Connie, because we know Connie's really got a pretty good handle already on things, but you know, you can always look from a fresh perspective and kind of sharpen your vision.
Well, I think it's this is where we get sort of blind to what's in the house. When I go and walk into somebody's house and see something in the corner and go, what's that over there? Often the response that I get is, oh yeah, that came in one day when whatever. And that came in one day and we put it over there and we've forgotten about it. And so I think that there's a lot of a house layout and contents that just become background. They just sort of fade into the background and you don't pay attention. And there wasn't ever an intentional choice for it to be there. It was just something, it was a problem to solve in the moment so you could get on with what was going on. You had to go make dinner and this had to get out of the way. And so you moved it over there and then promptly ignored it for the next 15 years.
Or worse. Stacked things on it so that you couldn't even see it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So I think this is all about getting conscious about what's in the space and why it's there. And if anybody ever had a reasonable thought or expectation that it should be there for the 15 years it's been there, and trying to go, yeah, I need to look at everything in the house and go, do I really need that? Does this really need to be here? Or was it just, I pushed it there because I didn't want to think about it in the moment, or I didn't have time, or I had to go fix dinner and I couldn't deal with that right now. And then you never came back to it. And so I think our houses are definitely a reflection of all those decisions that we didn't have time to face in the moment or to be conscious about it. And so creating a vision for the house is all about sort of setting the parameters for, we want the house to do and be these things. And now let's very consciously go look at everything that we have and see if that makes sense, to see if it supports what we were hoping the house would be, or if it has absolutely nothing to do with our vision and we really should be conscious of its presence and let it go instead.
Another way the stuff gets you know, another way we get to where we are is just the big conditions change, and we don't make any adaptation when the change comes. Connie said, in follow up on her previous comment, the former bedroom of our daughter is a large storage room. Unfortunately, been that way too long.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are those transitions in life, right? Like the kids are there. And so for 15 years, 20 years, the house is built around the kids functioning. But then the kids grow up and go to school and go to college and go off to start their lives. And their day-to-day living is not part of your household anymore. And some people never adjust that function to the next stage, which is now we're empty nesters and we don't need this house to be, you know, set up for three kids to live here. And so making that shift, and in the moment, sometimes it's too distressing to think about it, but in that shift, I think it's really important to go, okay, we're going to have to come back here and look at, okay, now it's space and time for a new layout of the house. And it's going to require major shifting. And let's start getting on that. Let's focus on that. Same thing when you live that way and the elderly parent shows up, then you are readjusting for a permanent guest who is going to be there for 5 years or 10 years until they're gone. And so that's another phase of life. Maybe you're running a business out of the house and you have to surrender a room to be a base of operations for the business or storage for the business. And if that becomes a truth in your life, then making that space work to support the business is a major layout adjustment that can only serve you by paying attention to it and making a conscious plan about it instead of an unthought, unconscious plan of the stuff just sort of shows up there and gets shoved in the corner. It functions much better if you take the time to think about what it is that you want to do there and how it needs to support you and what things you're doing that need to be supported.
Ginger is with us again today and said, I've actually done an inventory of the contents of our whole house inside. Every drawer, shelf, cabinet, floor. My goal is nothing stored under beds or in floors or of closets.
That's a great goal because that all supports your functionality and also your mobility. Like if there's not a bunch of stuff underfoot, then it's much easier for you to move around in the house.
And
we've talked about that. Yeah, we've talked about that in terms of safety. And so it's an amazing goal that you're aiming for. And thank you so much for the topic spin that you spawned here from your comment. Yeah. We appreciate it.
Johanna, who is with us on Facebook, said, started my first office job this week, and with only two knit tops and a pair of boots, I created a great low maintenance and low decision fatigue winter capsule. Yay. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Clutter Fairy and lovely assistant Ed.
You're welcome.
I had
that's awesome,
that
right?
And Claire said, I looked at every garment I own. I asked myself, when and where will I wear this next? If I didn't have an immediate response, it was rejected into the donation bag. 27 garments gone. Hurrah.
That is awesome. Good job.
And then on the same topic, Linda said, out of the box thinking, natural fibers, cotton, wool, etc., can be put into compost, cut up, or laid down as a weed barrier with wood chips or leaf mulch on top.
Ooh, that's an interesting idea. Well, yeah, that certainly is, recycling at its basic form, right?
Well, the great thing about it is they will biodegrade. So there'll be a weed mm-hmm. barrier for a year or two. And by that point, your layer of mulch is probably going to be thick enough you'll put more mulch on top, but it'll help you keep the weeds from starting as you're establishing a new area.
Cool. Well, and if it biodegrades and like maybe there's, you got to turn the beds at some point and you put it in a new layer, right?
Do it all again. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Catherine said, my whole apartment has become a base for the future business. that is a problem.
Well, and so, yeah, that's one where this is where you decide how many of these rooms am I surrendering for the business? And if I'm going to make these three rooms be about the business, then I need to bring in storage to support that. You don't want to just layer it in amongst the house stuff. You need to clear out the house stuff and move in business stuff, shelves, desk, tables, whatever you need to function to do the business, you need to design the room to be that. And so you're making a choice there. I can't have anybody in that bedroom because I am going to put the business in the bedroom, and you can't have everybody in that part of the living room for the same reason. And so planning how much of the house you want to surrender to the business, I think, is important. And then building it as if you had rented a storage space or rented an office space for the business, building it exactly like you would have it anywhere that you would rent space, and let it function that way, will help you keep set. Like, you don't want to surrender your bedroom to the office, to the business. You need that bedroom to sleep in. So you want to isolate the businesses to some part of the house and retain some part of the house for yourself personally. And so making a plan for that will help.
Well, and in parallel, you can be working on the vision for the business, where you set a time frame. I'm gonna tolerate living this way for this many years until my income reaches this level, and then I'll be moving into professional space. Or if it's
until the business can support that overhead expense,
until you're successful enough that you move to the bigger house with a more isolated space for the business, or the garage apartment, or the mother-in-law apartment that you can turn into the business space.
A business center. Yeah. I mean, and that's a good thing to think about. Like, you have some goals for the business being successful, and having that, at what point does the business income support an overhead of an office space that separates your house from your business again? Because I'm not sure that you want that to be a permanent arrangement. So stage one, new business, and it's all together. But stage two can be, at some point, you launch out.
Yeah. Okay, Allie has a great question. How do you recommend that we hold space for both the intention and vision of our space? In essence, where do we keep this conscious plan such that we continue to live in this not yet curated reality moment by moment, and decision by decision, in our brains, minds, heart, notebook, journal, photo album, or what?
I think having a vision board to go with your vision is a great idea. So if you are comfortable with pictures and craftiness, you can make a big poster board that has the vision ideas on it. If you are more of a writer person, then you can journal it. But I think the idea of having it out visually, even if you're writing out a list of things that you want to have, what you want to say about your space, having that be on a paper that you stick up on the fridge, or stick in the bathroom wall, or stick in the, you know what I'm saying? Make that be a place where you would see it all the time, to help you keep it in mind. Because granted, we're recognizing that this vision is a new way of thinking about the house. It's not your traditional, well-entrenched way of thinking about the house. And so reinforcing that by seeing it all the time, hang it on the closet wall, hang it on the shower door, stick it somewhere where you can see it and can be looking at it. So it's still at top of mind as you move around the house. And you can occasionally, like when you're going to go work on something, go into read the list fresh before you start working on an area. Oh yeah, I need to remember that part of my vision is I want the house to be relaxing for everybody, and this is not relaxing, right? So it's a way to help you focus on what you're hoping will be created instead of what you're looking at in the moment. And a lot of people get stuck on what they're looking at in the moment, and this is a way to support you in visioning something new and better.
We're going to talk more about that next week. Mm-hmm. Catherine commented, it really helps me to start by photographing each space, then looking at those photos somewhere away from that room so I can have a more detached attitude, like I am helping a friend out.
That's a really great idea. And it's sort of like now you're looking at a magazine and you're going, no, I don't like that. And you know, see this picture of this room. I don't like that there. And I don't like that there. It is a more neutral way of looking at it. And it also allows you to see more clearly with a sense of remove, but you can still see all the elements, what it looks like to somebody else. If you're looking at a photograph, that's a really great idea. If you find it super stressful to stand and look at the actual room, take some pictures and go sit down somewhere comfortable with the pictures and look at them. And that's a great way to make your lead in to get a few steps into the process without being too overwhelmed. I like it.
And Ginger says, I have a private Facebook page for my home organization with photo albums for each room, panoramic shot, then each closet, cabinet, drawer. It's where I store lots of before and after shots, declutter projects in progress.
Ooh, I wouldn't have thought to do that in Facebook, but what a great idea. And same thing, you could do it in Dropbox. You could do it in, you know, any kind of a Evernote, whatever, you know, project planning operation you want to use. She's doing it in private Facebook group that she sees herself and nobody else. So all great ideas. That's fabulous.
I don't really use Pinterest or Instagram much, but can you do private?
They do have private stuff in Pinterest.
Controlled access stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have just to share. For you, just for your family.
Yeah, you can have boards in Pinterest that only you can see, or you can only share with certain people. So Instagram, I think, would be more a public feed more. But Pinterest, you can definitely have private boards.
Connie says, sometimes I pretend I'm cleaning somebody else's home, and that helps me look at my spaces differently, as in, why is she saving this?
Why is that piece of furniture there? Exactly. I think that's, you know, it's all an effort to break through what is habitual and familiar and therefore sort of unconscious and come at it with a new and fresh version. So taking the photographs is one way, thinking of pretending like it's somebody else's house is another way. Like it's all exercises to help you see it freshly, to look at it with a more conscious understanding of what you're seeing. And those are great ideas.
Okay, I'm absolutely not going to skip over the tittle this week, but first, I want to remind those who are with us live that we also have a YouTube channel, if you hadn't discovered it yet, with more than 180 videos on lots and lots of organizing topics. Visit cfhou.com/YouTube. Subscribe to our channel while you're there and click the bell icon next to the subscribe button if you'd like to get notifications when we post new content each week. Rowan has a comment that is, as she so often does, she's given me a great segue into next week. So Rowan said, maybe a step after I want a peaceful space, then answer the question, what makes a space peaceful? Today, we've talked about how your home's functions, the people who live in it, and your most loved belongings contribute to a vision-free home that supports the life you want. Next week, we're going to explore bringing your values, your dreams, and your aspirations into the process of designing your vision, a vision that will clarify and guide your decluttering efforts. So join us next week, Tuesday, November 23rd, for Values, Dreams, and Aspirations, Shaping a Vision for Your Home, Part 2. Okay, Gail, you want to give us the tittle?
Yes. Yeah, so Creating a Vision Part 1 is our tittle this week. This week's assignment is to identify key elements that will shape and support your process of crafting a vision for your home. First, you can start an inventory of the objects or collections that you consider non-negotiable. Those things that no matter what you do to that house, they're staying. And you need to know what those things are, because it's not everything in your house, but there are some things that are super important to you or to somebody, and they need to stay and be incorporated. Second, you want to make a list of the stakeholders who share responsibility for decision-making and for the maintenance of the space. Those are the people that you have to negotiate and collaborate with to make your compromises with about what the design of the house is going to be. So you got to know who they are. You want to make a list of the functions and purposes that you need your home to serve, including any that aren't currently being met. because you know that there are some things that you have in your mind. I wish I had a craft room. I wish that I could sew in here. I wish that I could cook more. And so having those ideas in mind about here, it needs to function in these ways, but I also would like it to function in these ways that haven't happened yet. And you want to begin identifying items and past choices that feel out of sync with who you are and how you want to live. So finding those things in the house that are like, yeah, why is this bookcase here? Like the story of my client who, I mean, somebody that was at one of my speeches who said there was a bookcase in the hallway she was saving for her son for when he bought a house, but he was 40 and he was renting a room at a friend's house. And the idea of him being able to buy a house was very far down the road. And so she was mad at the bookcase and didn't want the bookcase to be there. So these are the kinds of things you want to notice about the house and figure out what choices have you made that were a mistake and what things in the house are things that you really just don't want to be there. So it's sort of the object of the items that are non-negotiable that have to stay. And now you want to look at the items and the choices about things you've done in the house that are like, probably don't want to keep that one. Let's get clear that that's leaving, right? So those are the things you want to try to work on this week. See if you can, this is like part one of creating a vision. And then we're going to talk about some more stuff later. And you will end up with creating a vision part two next week.
Okay, if you're watching this on YouTube, we would love for you to join us live. To receive notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. You can also follow us on Facebook by visiting cfhou.com/Facebook, or join our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. We love to hear from you, so please keep your questions, comments, and topic suggestions coming on YouTube, Facebook, or anywhere that you find us. And you could always reach us through our website at clutterfairyhouston.com.
Thanks, everybody, for coming this week. We love that you came to listen to us talk about our vision for your house, and we hope that you can come back next week so we can complete this vision and get you focused on something that feels supportive and wonderful to you. We will see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.